You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media
app. On the Hour. Presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. Some 120 million Americans are under heat alerts in the South and Southwest, but that is not the only weather story out there.
In Oklahoma, winds pushing a freight train off the tracks. Severe storms in Ohio snapped trees and damaged homes, while in Pennsylvania, water was the threat. The body of 2-year-old Maddie Shields pulled from the Delaware River miles away from where her family was swept away in a flood last week.
Although Maddie was found 32 miles away from where she was lost, she has never been closer to all of our hearts as she is now.
The remains of her mother were found previously, and her 9-month-old sibling is still missing.
CBS's Bradley Blackburn. Despite the heat, they're going to play soccer in Davis, California. What are they doing to beat the heat? Here's KOVR's Madison Keevy.
Just under 200 teams will take the fields this weekend for the Davis Legacy Tournament. Gallons of water on the sidelines.
You watch your son or daughter, and you sort of forget the weather for just, a shade, but it's very hot.
Temperatures are expected to exceed 100 degrees. Artificial intelligence is quickly evolving, but regulation and legislation is lagging. Now the White House has teamed up with tech to get tough on AI safety.
Flanked by the heads of some of the world's leading AI developers, President Biden announced Friday the companies had agreed to voluntary safeguards on the technology, including security testing of AI systems before their release, developing tools like watermarking so consumers know when content is AI generated, and researching the risks AI can pose to society.
That's CBS's Christina Ruffini at the White House. Former President Trump's classified documents trial is now set for May of 2024. CBS's Dana Jacobson reports.
The federal judge rejected Trump's request to delay the trial until after the presidential election. Instead, it will be held weeks after more than a dozen states hold their primary contests on Super Tuesday. The GOP frontrunner is facing 37 charges, including violations of the Espionage Act, for his alleged mishandling of classified documents stored at his Florida home.
Cleanup efforts are underway after a train derailment in Michigan. WNEM-TV's Raven Blue is there.
Kokalin Fire Chief James Burke says 6 cars derailed. Some were empty, but a few were carrying lumber. None of the cars went into the nearby river.
We're very lucky for the people around here. There was no hazmat. There was no fire. Very lucky for us. Very rarely happens. Every once in a while, you'll get a train that gets off the track a little bit, but they just put it back on. Our infrastructure's getting old. They need to rebuild.
This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed, the end-to-end hiring solution. Attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A lot of people live in places in Wisconsin not served by a dentist. Mike Moan spoke with some people who say licensed dental therapists could close the gap.
The Kaiser Family Foundation says the U.S. needs to add nearly 12,000 dentists to close gaps in shortage areas. Wisconsin has 173 areas under that designation, leaving small-town residents and marginalized populations without options to keep their teeth healthy. Matt Crispin of the Children's Health Alliance of Wisconsin says the state has done a good job in building up certain types of care in underserved areas, but there are limitations.
We take portable equipment out into communities and provide a considerable amount of preventive care in about 1,100 schools across the state. Unfortunately, about 40% of those kids that we see in schools need follow-up care, so fillings, extractions.
Crispin says coordinating that follow-up care is often challenging. He hopes Wisconsin joins the list of states to approve a licensing program for dental therapists. Supporters say they do a lot of the same types of work as dentists, including restorative care, but their employment costs are more manageable. The American Dental Association opposes the idea, citing safety concerns. But backers say these programs provide extensive training. Dr. Frank Catalanato of the National Coalition of Dentists for Health Equity says dental therapists have proven effective in states like Minnesota, suggesting they can help families elsewhere who have to travel great lengths for oral care.
Now, mom or dad doesn't have to take 4 hours of time off from work at their hourly job to take the kid to the dentist.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Jolly Good Soda. Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Cripescast. This week, my guest is comedian Rory Scovel. He is so funny. He's coming into Milwaukee and a bunch of dates around the Midwest coming into Milwaukee soon. Check it out. Ticket links and all that. Colleen Maraca, what EP of the Cripescast. Colleen, what day is Rory coming to Milwaukee?
Rory's coming to Milwaukee. He's coming to the Turner Hall Ballroom July 21st. Tickets are at roryscovel.com. He's also got some Minneapolis dates around then, Chicago. So, if you're not specifically in the Milwaukee area, like it's the perfect time. It's right in the summer. That's when you ought to be in the Midwest. So he's going to be, long story short, he's going to be in the Midwest. Yeah. He's coming here the 21st.
He's so funny too. I mean, he's working, he's tightening up his next hour. So it's going to be a real treat to go see him. Anyway, we'll chit chat with him in a minute.
You guys also went down like a Catholic church rabbit hole of all.
Yeah. And let me say this off the top. Cause I grew up Catholic. He grew up Catholic, and there's a lot of great things about, you know, the Catholic faith and all this and that. And, you know, a lot of people, get a lot of good out of it. And I think you certainly can, but I think you also have to acknowledge that the Catholic Church has had some problems, historically speaking, you know, Crusades being one of them. Also the whole pedophilia aspect. So, you know, you can't just look at the positive aspects of something. And, you know, that church, like any other church, is inherently flawed. Because you got people involved and people are inherently flawed. So to not acknowledge that is a little disingenuous, but that was a disclaimer. With all that said, it was really cool talking to him just because he is sort of a comedian's comedian, you know. Conan really, I think, gave him an awesome platform, really sending him on his career. And he does so many creative, cool things, an entire, you know, stand-up special, just crowd work. His crowd work and improv is so good. His, you know, straight stand-up is amazing. So, I really like talking to him. And also, you know, we have a lot of similarities. You know, we had the news business. We both come from big families, Catholic families. And it was kind of cool talking about that. What did you like about it, Colleen? Tell me what you liked about my podcast, Colleen. Not fishing for compliments at all, but
this
you know.
This is the affirmation hour. This is the only time I'm nice to Charlie is when we're on air.
And you're not even, can I just say, you're not even that, you don't even pretend to be that nice to me on air.
I just want to like make a disclaimer that I am normally a nice person, but I think Charlie just brings the worst out of me.
Oh, that's nice of you to say live on air.
I'm kidding.
That's really nice. Anyways, folks, I do want to let you know, if you're looking for an interesting environmental way to clothe yourself, we've got a bunch of merchandise on mandwalkmint.com, made in the USA, which means lower carbon footprint, also supports American workers. You can check it out, cripscast.com, click on the merch section, and you can also find us, patreon.com/CharlieBehrens. Two great ways to support the pod. And with that, should we get right into it?
Also, one other thing.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about tour. We have more tour dates coming up. So just like when people email in or whatever, or message in being like, when are tour dates coming up? We update the Kreiskast website and charliebarons.com pretty much instantaneously as we know tour dates. Also, send us places that we should send Charlie for tour dates. But be checking our tour pages pretty regularly. That's when we will let folks know that you're going specific places.
Excellent. Yeah. And we also do a first look at tour dates, the initial push on the Patreon. So if you want like those initial blip on tickets, check that out too. All right. Well, that's enough promo-y stuff. Should we dive in, Kelly?
Please.
All right. Let's talk to Rory Scovel. So, yeah, where are you right now? Where's your home at? A specific address and location?
Yeah. And here's my social and credit card. I am in Los Angeles. I've been gone for about 2 months in Atlanta. And before that, I was doing the tour. And now I'm back in LA before I start the next leg of this tour.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're coming, I see, to the Turner Hall Ballroom in Milwaukee.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you played that venue before?
I have not. No, I've only played Milwaukee one other time. It was a comedy club. And I think it was probably, 11 plus years ago. So pretty excited to get back.
Was that the club that was below a strip club?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of I can't remember what
tap and heels. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
It was a long, long time ago. But yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a goofy one. Not a bad initial premise. I mean, I bet you could do a supercut of all the comedians making fun of that aspect of it. You'd probably get a nice little video there.
Opening local banter always included the strip club for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to avoid it on that, you know? Yeah.
Right.
I'll go talk to the guy upstairs or something like that. Gal upstairs. I don't know. There's some jokes there. Are you excited to go back on tour? Are you enjoying not?
Yeah, I am excited. I was getting into a pretty good rhythm, and then I was fortunate enough to get cast in a movie that shot in Atlanta, so that kind of took me away from it. And so I'm excited. You know, once I had my rhythm going, it feels like such a comfortable space to be in for stand-up. So I'm excited to like find it again. But I will say, sometimes when you take time off, it's kind of great, because then when you go back to do the hour again, it's changed a little bit. You're out of the repeated script of what all the jokes, you know, like they change because you forget a little bit, you know.
Yeah, because you haven't memorized to a degree, or at least the beats, and then you can live in it a little more and take the moments.
That's
you
right.
know, like, you ever shoot a special, and then I'm sure you probably have, and then you're still doing maybe some of the material because the special hasn't come out, and you're like, damn, that should have been the special.
Yeah. And then you also like, you think of a tag that you're like, that was there the whole time. Or like, for some, this is what I love and hate about it. It's like, to your example, like then like the light bulb goes off and you realize, actually, this joke should have gone after that joke, and I should have gotten rid of that one sentence that no one ever laughed at, but for some reason I kept saying it. Yeah. And then it's always after the fact. And as frustrating as that is, there is something I still love about that as well, where it's kind of always changing and growing, even when you have to walk away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the next time I do a special, I may like tell myself I'm going to do this special, but no, it's not really the special. I don't think it's going to work though. I think you need that, like, okay, this is it, to like totally screw yourself mentally. But then that release is when you find a lot of beauty.
I think my goal is at the end of this tour in like November or whatever, we kind of keep finding dates here and there to add, but I'm hoping that all of this repetition of doing it over and over again, that either I do find those sweet gems that you're talking about that kind of appear out of nowhere before we record, or I get so tired of doing this hour that I don't even
care.
As shoot,
yeah.
No, I don't know that for us comics that there is a perfect special where you go, and that was me peaking, and that was when I loved it. It's like, no, we usually record when we're so tired of it.
I know.
Too early, or we do it too early where it hasn't cooked enough.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then there's always that one show. Like for me, it was like, I think Minneapolis at the State Theater. I'm like, that
that I should have recorded.
Yeah.
That was it. And no, I didn't do anything. I don't even think I recorded the audio on it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just it. It's better in my memory, you know, than it actually was. That could be.
You know what I think? I think it's because I think what we do is so with that, because it's a live experience, it's so with that live crowd.
Yeah.
That us recording albums, which is a kind of a different story, but, you know, recording specials, it's kind of not ever going to accurately grab what it is we do, because as soon as those cameras are on and the stakes are raised, we're no longer up there just kind of noodling around with the guitar having fun. We're it's got to be perfect and it's got to be concrete, because when I die, this will still
I know
this will be my legacy. We think so grandeur of ourselves that we think this matters so much, and on nights where you don't have the camera going, you and an audience walks away, like you're saying at the State Theater, you and an audience walk away going, that was the greatest night, that was the greatest show. But yet it wouldn't have been if you would have put four or five cameras up.
That's really it. So the trick then is, you know, we just have to spend all the money that we would make on these shows filming every show, and then we'll have no money but a great show somewhere in there. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And then also chop them all together where our clothes are changed, the backdrop is changing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Adam Sandler did that on, I forget, like 99% Fresh or whatever.
His last one. Yeah.
Have you ever seen any other comedians do it that way, where you take like clips from different places?
You'd have to have a crazy budget. And so,
oh, yeah, because you'd have to film all of
him.
Yeah.
You'd have to be him and beyond, because you need the crew. You've got to have your director. I can't even imagine what sitting down and cutting that thing been like.
I'm glad he did it.
No one else would. You'd have to be his level of fame to get that budget to do it. And if I had that, I don't know that I would want to do that. I think I'd still be like, no, let's not shoot everything.
Because it kind of it can get in the way a little bit. I mean, now guys are bringing camera people out, you know, to every shoot to get those crowd work clips.
Those clips.
Yeah.
And that's really helping our craft. And I've always appreciated that.
I can just feel I'm bathing in the sarcasm right now. How do you truly feel about that? I mean, it's I don't know.
I think all of us as individual artists and employees have to survive. And I think we live in a strange time, and also we work in a strange medium of live entertainment, and we've got to do what we got to do. I think overall, I like posting clips that are jokes that I just don't do anymore. And hopefully that gains me some tickets. Honestly, ticket sales. Hopefully that gets people to come to a
show.
That's
why we're doing it.
But I don't want people showing up assuming, I love crowd work, I like doing that stuff too, but I don't want anybody showing up assuming that is what I do and that's what I want them to actively participate in and inspire and go after, because I really want to do my act and I want to be in control of the show, and I don't want to have to throw people out. I don't have to remind someone a 10th time to stop talking. But I think there's people that go to shows now actively wanting to be in a clip, wanting to be something. Oh yeah, I saw that on their page. That's my voice. That's me in the crowd.
Yeah, and now there's shooting of the crowd, so now there's that further invitation. Yeah. I mean, have you noticed a distinct change in that in your shows with your audience?
I think because this is a tour. I mean, if I was just doing clubs right now, I might notice that. That might be the case, but I think maybe because it's more these theaters and less clubs, you get less of that. You know, you don't see a lot of clips where people are playing a theater and getting crowd work stuff. And again, like I'm not anti crowd work, but if you post a bunch of clips of just doing crowd work, I think I personally, as an audience member, I would wonder what is the product. And I get it. You don't want to burn material. And that's why I sit here saying everyone's got to do their own thing, because I couldn't tell you what the solution is. You know, I don't know how long you've been doing this. I'm on, I think, 18 or 19 years. I liked it back when this was not a part of our craft. You just wrote your thing and you tried to collect email addresses.
Right, right. Get your list going. Yeah. Give me your email address. I'll give you a free sticker, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Those days are obviously long gone, but I appreciated that when it was like, oh yeah. That, and then you just get up and you do your thing, you play your show, and you don't have to get involved in this other aspect of our craft. I mean, getting up and doing stand up alone, you know, the amount of people that say, I don't know how you can do it, even though you know how you can do it. And it's not as crazy as people's interpretation of it is, but still a lot of people don't want to publicly speak under any circumstances. And yet we are able to get up there and do it. And it is still a hard thing to do, to entertain people. And it'd be captivating and interesting for anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes. That is a tough thing to do, and to craft an act that can accomplish it. Then on top of it, it's like, now also be your own web designer and be your own clip maker and be your own. And you know, look at us. I mean, I have a podcast. You've got a podcast. We're having to like find these other outlets of promoting ourselves. We're doing these other fields.
Five different jobs. Six different jobs. Do you have a team helping you out? Or are you doing all this kind of?
For helping me out with clips, I have a friend, Chad, who was doing stuff for Todd Glass, and now he started doing mining clips for me and posting Instagram and TikTok and YouTube and all the various outlets of trying to get people aware of you. But I'd say it's like basically him doing it. I have a friend, Garrett, who redid my website.
Shout out to tour. Garrett,
Garrett Boatman, Chad Maxwell. But yeah, I don't know. It's all confusing me because I'm pretty lazy in general. I like getting on stage and doing stand up and having that be my job. Let me create the product. And if someone's like, this is what we should do with the product, well, then I'm all ears and I'm open to someone doing it. I just don't want to be the one to do it, because I just want to focus on what we do, and these are the things I enjoy. I like getting on stage and I like doing my podcast. I love those things.
Yeah. Because the other aspect, the editing, all that puts you in such a different headspace and it burns you out quick, I think.
Yeah. It's like trying to make a movie and deciding you're going to be the head of every department. It's like, you can't do wardrobe. You can't do makeup and hair and set design. Yeah. You just do the thing you did, which is write it or direct it or act in it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's too much.
Yeah. It is a lot. You have some of the, I mean, craziest crowd work though. I forget, I didn't see this. I think I heard this a little while ago. So if I get this story wrong, excuse me, but you were doing a show maybe in New York or something, and you're doing crowd work and you just walked out of the club and brought like your mic was still on so they could still hear you. And then you talked to like a taxi driver or something and brought him back on stage.
I did that in San Diego.
Okay.
I was down there doing Conan's, you know, he does Conan Con, like he does.
Oh yeah. During
the thing. Yeah. During Comic-Con.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we were down there, and at the time I was doing my fully improvised hour type shows, and they asked if I wanted to do it. So I was in a venue where the door off the stage really went right into the street. And there was a limo driver, but now it's not limos, it's like these nice black SUVs. It was like a driver.
Yeah.
He was just standing there and for some reason was willing to come back on stage, and I gave him a microphone and just kind of chatted with him and interviewed him. But it was funny because he was waiting on someone who was at my show without that person to be like leaving. They were leaving early.
That's hilarious.
But, you know, when you're improvising an hour, you're like, oh, I need all the wood possible to keep feeding the fire. So as soon as that was outed, like that gave me a direction to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. That working was all hinged on that guy being down to play. And obviously, like, he was super chill too.
So when you take like a risk like that, I mean, that's the high, and you've got to probably, I would imagine, have an equal low. Do you have like something where you tried going big and it just bombed horrendously?
Nothing comes to mind. I mean, and it's probably because our brains protect us. So all those times I bombed, my brain's like, delete that, delete it. Only remember the good. Yeah. I don't know that there's any time where I tried to go super big with something and it didn't pan out to be anything, because I'm always very cautious. Like, if that guy would have come on stage and his vibe would have been strange, I probably would have, you know, I waited a second before I gave him a mic to participate. Okay. You know what I mean? You're trying to read you're trying to read the defense a little bit before you throw the ball. So I haven't run into taking big swings and then it not pan out. I've taken big swings where, I have one example that was kind of a tough recovery. I was performing in Tampa Bay. I think it was the Improv, and someone got up to go to the bathroom. And so I got a second microphone. I put my microphone on the stage, and I've done this before, and I think it's really funny, but I put the microphone on stage and then I went and hid with another microphone, and I told the audience to pretend like they can still see me on stage. So when that person comes back, they're like, what are we looking at? Maybe it looks weird to them. And that person was leaving. They never came back.
Oh, really?
They weren't going after. They were done with the show. All of my stories involve people leaving early. They were leaving the show. And so eventually, after 5 minutes, I just had to get back on stage with an entire audience being like, why did we do what in the f- was that? And then, you know, going straight to material to be like, all right, let's see if I have any A cards and try to build some momentum again.
Well, that's
I also
fun.
Stupidly did it towards the end of the show too. So, you know what I mean?
That's definitely a middle portion, you know, where you can, they're either clearly mad and leaving. There's not really mistaking the bathroom for jetting out of there early to beat the rush of traffic in Tampa, beat those chickens. They got so many wild chickens down there.
Yeah. No, Tampa's a strange, Florida's a strange state.
It is a strange, strange state. Yeah. It's, it's crazy, man. And also, like, I was talking to some people, it got leveled by the, hurricane and like Fort Myers, I think they're like, yeah, it's all leveled. I'm like, so are people going to rebuild there? They're like, oh yeah, that's a hot real estate market. I'm like, wow, we are just dumb people in general. You know, we are just, you know, like between that.
Oh, yeah. It's the best place to live for till the next hurricane.
You're right. Right. Which will be any day now, you know.
Yeah.
It's nuts. I don't know. I don't know what that's about. Hottest day of the year ever recorded a couple days ago. Do you know that?
In Florida or what?
Everywhere. Everywhere. Around the planet.
Overall records were broken.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting. Surprising. Yeah. Surprising to you?
Not surprising, eternally terrifying. Mm-hmm. I go down that road of politics and environmental concern and live in that eternal question mark of, well, where, outside of myself doing the best I can to not be trying to not endanger the environment, what can we do? Because I think we're learning more and more, it's becoming more and more difficult to convince anyone of any slight change that might be positively affecting anything. And so you kind of just are like, all right, well, I think about my own health. I just go, all right, you know what? If someone eats meat and they go, it's fine, eat a ton of meat. And then someone says, eat less meat, it's better for your body. And then someone says, don't eat any meat at all. It's really bad for the environment. I live in that space of going, well, I don't need anyone to convince me that eating a lot of meat is unhealthy. That should be a logical thing. Now, the road of no meat or less meat, that's do what you want. I fully believe our agriculture is destroying I think it is the main contributing factor of our climate issues. But for me personally, who was raised on meat, I'm not sitting here 100% not eating meat as someone aware of the problem. So with me being in that mind frame, I don't know how you convince someone who couldn't even fathom these ideas as being, you know, as changing positively towards any kind of change. I don't know. That was a confusing sentence. But I think
no, I get what you're saying. If you yourself, knowing everything, can't be fully on board with it, how can you expect to commit someone whose entire livelihood depends on that kind of situation?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you on that. Yeah, and then the interesting thing is it's possible that all this AI stuff can figure out how to, you know, sequester carbon more efficiently than we can. And then the question is, you know, do we all, you know, is it climate change that takes care of humanity, or is it AI, you know, that takes care of humanity. And by takes care, I mean
takes kills.
Goner. Yep. Yeah, they're in no goal anymore, you know.
Yeah,
they're gone.
You know, the AI thing is interesting because there is this element of hope and this element of fear at the same time, because and the fear is justified, but it does also come from a place of fictional storytelling where all we've ever told ourselves is that robots are not our friends and intelligent, you know, non-life forms, non-living entities will want to kill us. We've been told that. And so Terminator. We believe that. And it doesn't mean exactly. And it doesn't mean we're wrong. And you know, I think it's right to be fearful of anything, like, until you really understand what it is. But we never kind of go down the road of like, is there any percentage of something positive to gain from this, from something that is going to be smarter than us? Do we have to assume that it will be evil? Do we have to assume that it will learn that we are the problem? Or will it develop and just actually want to help us and be motivated to help us? I know this is a very broad statement because we can't fully identify what all things AI truly is or can be. But I wonder, can we benefit from it ultimately in a coexist kind of way? Can AI be the thing that goes, you know, because humans trying to create peace with humans doesn't work.
Well, I mean, yeah,
and I always wonder, if aliens came down from space, would that be the thing that gets everybody on Earth going, you know, oh, we're all on the same team because we actually need another thing.
Right. We need a common enemy.
Can AI be our moderator that says, hey, you guys need to shut up and listen. You can survive on this planet, but you need to do these things. And then we all just agree that's right or fake news. I read the funniest news thing today is that Republicans are now wanting to block a bill to extinguish disinformation on social media. And they are the political party that hypes how fake the news is. They constantly talk about fake news. And now they don't want to this disinformation. It's
I don't understand this. They this is federal. This is Congress.
Yeah. So I don't know the details of it because I was reading about it. By the way, if anyone listening to this, I get a lot of information from Heather Cox Richardson, which I think is a great outlet for not just current day information, but actual just historical, like where does, you know, obviously easy one, where does 4th of July come from? But like details of like stories where you go, oh, that's an interesting tidbit from history I didn't know about, you know.
Yeah.
But also Judd at Popular Information, and everything should be read with a grain of salt, but I read both of those things. But yesterday Trump appointed Judge Terry A. Doughty of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana issued a preliminary injunction saying the First Amendment prevents the government from trying to stop the spread of disinformation.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. Well, freedom of speech, I guess. Right. So,
yes. Yes. Yes.
And I historically speaking, I suppose yellow journalism, you know, that's kind of what that was. So, yeah, I mean, it does. That doesn't mean that's going to make us any better. You know, that's an interesting hill to go up and die on. You know,
I just thought it was funny because it's like, hey, that's it's everyone's First Amendment right to be able to publish fake news is like basically what highlights.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You hate fake news. But now here's the thing going, hey, let's get rid of fake news. You're like, whoa, that's not, you can't get rid of fake news. That's not fair.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup. Mondays 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Punishing heat continues, especially in Phoenix. Meteorologist Brian Hurley is with the National Weather Service.
A little bit of a streak going. I think they've got 5 days through yesterday, 5 straight days of 115 and higher.
Alabama lawmakers have finalized a new congressional map with one majority black district instead of the federal court recommended two. WIAT-TV's Maddie Beertemple reports.
Federal judges will decide whether this map can stand or whether they'll appoint a special master to redraw the congressional lines. There's a hearing in Birmingham on this map August 14th.
President Biden names Admiral Lisa Franchetti to lead the Navy and the first woman on the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
16% of all members of the U.S. military are women. And with the expanded role for women over the past 40 years, it was virtually inevitable that a woman would eventually lead one or more of our military services.
CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland, CBS News Brief.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISBRAP. That's 833-947-8727. Or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Don McCrute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Democratic candidates are held to a higher moral standard. I don't see Representative McCarthy calling for George Santos to shamefully leave the halls of Congress. It is never principle above party. It is never principle and policy above person and personal achievement for Republicans.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Professor Schwaber, what grade would you give the Supreme Court for their interpretation of the law?
That doesn't really work. The grade ordinarily would be how accurately and thoughtfully and carefully have you interpreted, you know, existing precedents. I tell you what, though, if I were teaching a course in, let's say, logic, and I was asked to grade this work in terms of its coherence and its rigor, a high D.
Wow.
A high D.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry and Jane Mattenair. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, folks, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is the Cripes Cast. You are listening to my conversation with comedian Rory Scovel.
Speaking of news, you were a newsman back in the day, weren't you?
Right. Yeah, I worked at a local news station in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Oh, I was doing Spartanburg.
Camera.
Nice.
Yeah. Camera guy. So I had headphones on that were slightly bigger than these. And, yeah, just framing up shots, getting the anchors.
Oh, you were an in-studio guy. Did you ever go out and about or just in studio?
The only time I went out and about was to try to get footage of as many Friday night high school football games as possible. So you'd go with, there'd be two of you, you'd go as a team. And there in the upstate, there are so many high schools and there's so many games. And I think News Channel 7 prided itself on somehow collecting a significant amount of highlights. Like that was their claim to fame. So we like really hustled. So if you and I were on a team, one of us would drive feverishly to a game. You would jump out and you'd try to get one complete pass, a pan to the scoreboard, you know, because by the time we report the results of the games are over because it's 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
But the games are always at like 8 p.m. So a bunch of different groups of two. Sometimes you'd go by yourself, whatever spread people out, and you'd have five high school games you're trying to go get footage of, and you get your standard stuff like there's the cheerleaders, there's the crowd, there's a play, there's the coach mad, there's the scoreboard, and we're off to the next. And then someone would quickly cut all that together, and Pete Yannity would sit there, and while all those are playing, the clips are playing, everyone in the studio, we're sitting on the stage because you're not getting any footage of the actual anchor, and we're just watching the screen, which keeps showing highlights while we hear him talk about the scores in the game.
that
was a long story you didn't ask for at all.
No, it's like you're like Nightcrawler for football.
Yes, that is a perfect description. That's exactly right.
I used to do news too. I did news in Dallas. I was like an anchor kind of. Well, they wanted to do like comedy news, like it was called Nightcap, a different kind of news. And then after being there for like 3 months, they're like, all right, we tried this. Let's go back to the traditional stuff. And then after that, I lost my job. But it's such a weird thing, local news, and kind of how it's, you know, I think it can be really impactful, but the way they tend to do it, you know, is often not super. And I don't want to generalize all news stations, but like TV news, such a tough thing to do, like actual journalism. And you kind of have a lot of constraints in that.
A lot of constraints. And also, even now, by today's standards of how people, how sensationalized news is, and now news is opinion, talking heads, it's more of a form of entertainment disguised as news.
Yeah,
it has to make it even harder for local news that just wants to tell you that this guy Barry is opening a new milkshake store on Main Street, and here's him.
those are the best ones too, you know, those that, but yeah, you got like these bigger like Sinclair or whatever buying up a bunch of stations, and then, you know, that's when you get those everyone saying the same script over and over again.
Exactly. Yes.
It's a little disheartening, but speaking of Spartanburg, you're from Greenville. I lived in Greenville for like a year and a half.
When?
I lived there 2011 to like 2013, okay. Somewhere around
what,
there.
What took you there?
I'm so glad you asked. It was this thing called 1 Minute News. And there's, do you know Doug Greenlaw at all? Does that name ring a bell? No. Oh, you don't know that Greenlaw's down there. Okay. He worked for MTV, and then he started this this like YouTube news channel. So I worked there for like a year and a half. That was my first like on camera position. But yeah, I had a place, I forget, over in one of those old mills that they turned into like condos or whatever.
Off Augusta, off Augusta Road, like Pleasantburg.
I think. Somewhere. I kind of forget the streets, but those sound really familiar. You know?
Yeah. There's I know what you're talking about.
There's a bike path that kind of goes along the river, that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Greenville's a nice town. Do you like it?
I do like it. It has changed dramatically over the past 20 years since I've been in that area. And, it's beautiful. It's a really great, city. It has become strangely so many condos that are very expensive. And I have always wondered who lives in these condos that you have to purchase, because the purchase price of those condos is the same as going 5 minutes away and buying actual land and a house.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I don't know the main industry there, but there must be a hospital. That seems like a hospital kind of salary type thing, you know?
It's crazy. Truly it's awesome, but I do think they are going down a road of becoming so many condos. And I don't know anything about the history of cities and their evolution. I mean, maybe that's what all cities are and it's just not as noticeable, but I do like that it's growing. I think they regret being on every top 10 list for like best mid-sized city in the country to live in. Greenville is always on there. And I think they're regretting that. And I think that before that was a bragging point. Now they're like, everyone is moving here. Like, yeah, everyone looks at that list. They're like, oh, let's move there. That seems like a great place. And they're right. It is. It is a great place.
Did you start doing comedy there? Where'd you kind of get your start?
I went up in Spartanburg once before deciding I was going to move to DC where my sister lived to sleep on her couch and get a job and start doing open mics.
Okay.
So I didn't really start in Greenville, or really when we talk about like doing it and starting to do it, I didn't really do that till DC.
Well, what was your first, did they have an open mic in Spartanburg?
So they had an open mic poetry night.
And
when I graduated, I stuck around. I graduated in 03, 20 years ago, which seems insane to even say, but I graduated in May of 03. And that's when I started, you know, I was working at the radio or the news station, news channel. And I just one night was like, you know what, I'm going to go do this open mic poetry night. I'm going to see if I can do stand up. And it was at a place called the Guitar Bar. And I called and they said, we don't run the poetry night. You can do whatever you want. You can tell Joe. For some reason, I thought the rules were so hardened at these things. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you don't know a community. So I was like, well, it's a poetry night. They probably will be angry if I tell jokes. But I got there and the poets, there were four poets, and I brought everybody. I mean, I told so many friends I was going to go on stage. It's December of 03. The exams have just finished and no one has left for Christmas break yet. So many people showed up. I think it was a Monday night. So many people showed up to watch me do stand up and get drunk because, oh my God, our friend is going to go on stage. This is crazy. There's nothing else to do. Let's go watch this and drink beer. We were going to drink beer anyways. So the guy at the Guitar Bar said I could do whatever I wanted because I brought the entire audience. The poets, they were like, can you just go last? Because we've never had an audience and we don't want people to leave.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand anything. I mean, I didn't even know what I was going to even be doing up there. So I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know what this is. But I must have brought like anywhere from 20 to 40 people. I always say that because, you know, our memories decide to exaggerate them. Like there were 100 people there.
Right.
But, you know, it definitely, it could have been 40, but it also could have been 20. And anyways, I went on at the end and I talked for like 30 minutes doing crowd work. It was all my friends in the audience. So I did like crowd work. And I also told jokes that I thought were a bit, but I didn't know what I was doing at all.
So, okay. I think this is a very clear indication of what separates you from like most other people. Like most people, their first open mic, they're going to like look it up and not tell a soul and sign up and quietly be terrified, go up there and bomb their face off and not do stand up for another 6 months because they're traumatized. What was it that you had the confidence to bring all these people to your first time on stage and then you do crowd work for most of the time?
Yeah, I mean, so I tell it not in defense of myself, sort of a devil's mm-hmm. advocate. I think what gave me the confidence to do that was the fact that I invited, you know, the whole audience. So I was literally in front of people that it was easy for me to be in front of.
I see.
But I didn't really invite people thinking, yeah, I didn't mind showing off. I was always funny. I liked getting attention. Even on the soccer team, I would try to like make jokes and I didn't mind doing bits at parties and I didn't mind getting laughed at even if it was negatively. I just didn't mind performing. And so I just told people because I think I kind of thought, hey, they'll enjoy this because maybe I do well and they laugh, but also maybe we have something to laugh about because I am awful at this.
Yeah.
So it's like either way, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
To be even crazier, after that night, I was then going to visit my sister in DC on the high of going, oh, man, that was fun doing stand-up. I get to DC. I look up if there's anywhere for me to go try it up there. We find a place at a Best Western that's doing an open mic night. I show up there. My sister tells all of her friends, my brother's in town and he's going to try stand up. So again, I show up this time, I think with like 10 of my sister's friends.
Uh-huh.
And again, this place goes, you can't just come here and like get on stage. You have to like sign up. Everyone here was booked to do this show, but there's no one there. And I have 10 audience members and they know that if I leave, the audience leaves. And I'm not using this as collateral. I don't even know the power I currently have. I don't realize, they need me. I'm not realizing anything. I'm just like, oh, in my head, I'm like, oh, we'll just watch. We'll just hang out and we'll watch the show then. But they're like, all right, you can get up and do 5 minutes, which, you know, I'm like, oh, cool. Awesome. This will be fun. And so again, I did it. And then I decided after that, hey, I just found in the city paper all of these open mics. Maybe I should move to DC where my sister lives. So it's a comfortable transition. I have a place to stay. She can help me out until I get my feet on the ground. And here's all these open mics I can do. And so the very next thing I do, which is now going to be the third time I've been on stage, I book a farewell show in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And this time I do get about 120 people to show up. I charge $2 and I went on stage for an hour and 20 minutes. And it was miserable. Like I was doing okay in my brain then. Looking back, it was wildly unentertaining and so stupid and so self-serving. But that was my third time on stage. I arrogantly thought, oh, I'll just do like an hour long show because I'm leaving to go learn to do stand-up. Instead of leaving to go learn to do stand-up, I thought, I already know how to do it.
Did you feel you did an hour? Did you feel good on stage doing it, like in the moment?
Not really, because I and this is even more absurd. The night before is when me and my friend Rick sat down to write down some things that I could talk about on stage. And I look back on this and realize that my mentality is still, if you give me the two ingredients, I can figure out what to do with it. Like improv elements, basically.
Yeah,
where it's like, we sat on the couch and one of the early jokes he and I thought of was, I was always like, why don't homeless people stand outside of churches or banks? Why aren't those the two main places to stand as a homeless person? And there isn't a joke there. There is like an idea of like, hey, maybe that's a good idea. But I just went on stage with that. Like I would write that down and be like, all right, when I go on stage, I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And this farewell show is when that, hey, I'll just talk about it, because there's now 120 people there. And because I know a lot of them and they are there to see a show, I'm now on stage, not really doing a show, but the crowd work now is not as cute because there's too many people and they don't all know each other. They're different friend groups.
Right, right.
So now I'm not getting away with, oh, I know the crowd. So there are things where I got laughs, but I think ultimately it was a lot of people sitting there being like, oh, he's leaving town to go do this. Well, I guess we'll see him back here in 4 weeks.
But what I find funny about that is like, you still stayed on stage for an hour, 20 minutes. Most people would have bailed if it wasn't going great after 15, you know, some, yeah. I mean, you had the people, but you gave an hour, you know,
there's an element of I'm willing to commit to things that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
And then there's an element of I am so good and arrogant that I'm not proud of. And those two things converged. And that's what kept me on that stage. I am worth your attention, even though I know I'm not worth your attention.
Right. Right. Well, I think that's what probably makes you great at the whole deal. So when you went to DC, and you, like, did you, it seems like you already had your moment where you said, this is what I'm going to do. Did you have doubts that this was going to be your career at that point?
Or at that point, I didn't. I felt weird that I left my college town / kind of hometown, because some people from high school came to the show. I felt weird, like I left negatively, like, oh, I had a bad show and now I'm leaving to go do this thing. Like, that was my own interpretation of that experience, was, oh, maybe I'm an idiot, but also very excited because I'm about to move to a new city and it's a whole new adventure. And when I got to DC, my sister went out with me, Natalie, and we went to all of the open mics listed, all of the shows that you could go to that were like of a local level, not like the improv or anything, and watched the show, talked to who ran the show, signed up. And it's funny, the wait to get on all of those shows was about a month, so I signed up at all of them and I found the date that I would be coming back to get to perform. And I immediately signed up to start learning improv at Washington Improv Theater, started taking classes, and started going on stage a month later, and was sometimes okay funny but bombing a lot. also bombed enough to where I said to my sister, I think I got it wrong. I don't know that maybe I got lucky the few times I was good. Maybe it just worked. The crowd was good. And I don't know. I don't know why. And my sister gave me the best advice. She said, well, just give it 6 months before you give up. And in 6 months, if it's bad, then it's bad and you can stop doing it. And for whatever reason, that released me from the prison of expectations. All I knew was, hey, in 6 months, I can just not do this anymore but I'll just do it. And for whatever reason, that pressure of it needing to be good went away instantly. And I started doing a little bit better. I started becoming friends with the other comics. As you know, we feel like we found some underground community that you wouldn't have found in any other context, because the personalities in stand-up are so wildly different, but yet we're all crammed together and we realize, oh, we actually are friends, even though this person is wildly into Star Wars and I played college soccer and maybe we don't have anything in common, but we do have a lot in common because we both love stand-up. I started to become friends with a lot of the stand-ups and it just started to get better. I think DC was an incredible place to start stand-up because I think the talent level was really high. A lot of people that were starting were really funny. And so you just fought to keep up and try to be as good as, you know, everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, that is killer advice from your sister. I remember the first time I went up, it was some, like, I don't know, some coffee shop outdoor, so I really set myself up to fail there, and then I was so horrified by my bomb I didn't go up on stage for like 6 months after that. So that you know, whereas you were cranking for 6 months, I was doing nothing. So I love that advice. Speaking of your sister, you have a bunch of siblings, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I'm one of seven kids. I have one full sister, and then I have five younger half siblings. We all have a different mother, my older sister, and then the five youngest.
Got it. Okay, I'm one of 12, so I found that interesting. Yeah.
I'm one of the Duggars over here.
I know. Yep. A lot of folks in that family, I'll tell you that much. My parents, you know, they had their hobbies, we'll say it like that. So, did you, what were you, were you a Catholic or something like that?
Catholic.
Grew up Catholic?
Yeah. It's always Catholic.
It's always Catholic. Catholics with the kids. Did you do Catholic school or anything like that, or CCD?
Yeah, did all that. Did Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade, then Episcopalian high school, and that's
when you switched over.
Doing CCD. Yeah, there wasn't at the time. They were starting a Catholic high school, but it was so early on. We went to a more established, like, religious high school. I went there for 3 years. I failed the 10th grade. So I attended 10th grade. So I went 9th, 10th, 10th again. And then I transferred from there to a public school to do 11th and 12th grade.
Okay. So usually if you fail a grade, you go to a different high school. So nobody knows really you.
I know.
But you decided to, you know, double down on the bomb, huh?
Yeah. So this, I truly think this, also was a massive benefit to my psyche in some way, although I couldn't see it at the time, was that I failed English by 1 point. So all the other classes I passed, and at this particular private school, for me to get credit, I couldn't just go to a summer school or anything and get a better grade and then just move on to the 11th grade. I would have had to have gone to a approved boarding school for the summer that this school said, oh yeah, that they, you know, provide an equivalent education where we will give you the point. And my, you know, that we would have to pay for that. My dad worked at the post office. He was like, no, you're not, you're just repeating the 10th grade. So I went back to the 10th grade at this school. All my classes, I'm in the 11th grade, but for English, I have to repeat. But overall, my status is that I'm still in the 10th grade. And so the first day of school, all the grades are broken up in a different location in the school to have like assembly.
Yeah.
And I walk in to the 10th grade.
Attention, Wisconsin veterans.
Hello, I'm Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin. If you are a veteran struggling to pay for rent, utilities, or other life-sustaining services, I want you to know that the Veterans Rental Assistance Program is here to help. You have already made a most noble sacrifice. You shouldn't have to continue doing so. We are here to support you. The Veterans Rental Assistance Program was created by and for people living in Wisconsin, with benefit approvals being issued to veterans in just days, not months. It's never easy to ask for assistance, but rest assured, we're here to help. You've always been there for us. We want you to know that we're here for you. Call 833-WISVRAP. That's 833-947-8727, or visit VRAPWI.com. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin, thank you.